They say meat is environmentally and politically incorrect. And so billionaires like Bill Gates and Li Ka-shing are investing in proprietary replica meats that are correct. Their billions lead us to ask, can real hamburgers survive competition from replica burgers? Aaron, you missed it.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 986th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Mazatlan who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron Shore on the boards. Hey, Aaron.
Good morning.
Listen, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Will you be eating Billionaire Bill's replica burgers?
No.
No, you won't.
No.
Okay. Well, folks, it's a fact. Meat is becoming environmentally and politically incorrect. And so billionaires like Bill Gates and Li Ka-shing, together with numerous venture capital firms, are investing in the development of proprietary replica meats that will be correct. These new animal-less meats include a burger made from plant food, chicken strips and beef crumbles made from soybeans, meat made from stem cells, and eggs made from similar animal-less products. The big money now being invested in these replica meat and protein products, and that will certainly be invested in their marketing, is reminiscent of the introduction of margarine, the replica butter made with partially hydrogenated oils and trans fats. Given the big money now being invested in these replica food products and how that big money is used to shape public opinion and political processes, we simply must ask, can real meat survive competition from replica meat? Here to help us cook up some answers today, we have a man who will soon be faced with that competition, whether he wants to or not. David Peterson from the world-famous Coralitas Market and Sausage Company. David Peterson, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program. So happy to have you. I've wanted to put you on the radio for years, and now I have you here.
Well, Mr. Olson, I want to thank you very much for having me. This is quite an honor to be here sitting next to you.
Well, folks, if we hear a little background music, that's because we're broadcasting live today from the Eat Local First Festival, food festival, put on by the Think Local First organization of Santa Cruz County, California. We're at the Aptos Farmers Market, one of the nation's best farmers market. And Dave Peterson and his Coralitas Market are here almost every Saturday morning with the sausages. You know, later today, Saturday afternoon, I'm going to be going to a wedding, big barbecue. And I'm willing to wager just about anything that part of that barbecue will be, well, I'll be met with a sizzling Coralitas sausages on the grill there. And I know that almost every barbecue you go to these days has these great sausages. So I just got to ask you, David Peterson, the question that I've always wanted to ask, and that is, what's in the sausage?
Well, I've always have had that question over the years, but I'll tell you, Mike, that's why it's so nice dealing with a small guy. You know, whatever happened in the old days, it's kind of a dying breed where you go to a little small-time shop and they make their own homemade products and have their own smokehouses in the back and their own kitchen. And we know what kind of meat we're buying. We have our certain suppliers that we go through. But you hear all the scary stories about there that people don't like to eat what they can't see, such as hot dogs or hamburgers or sausages mostly. But if you know what? Excuse me for saying this, but we have an old saying. It's called crap in, crap out. You know, you buy quality, you deal with quality, and you get a quality product.
Well, there's a whole lot that goes into the Coralitas sausages that have become very famous around at least the United States. You do ship around the United States, don't you?
Yes, we do. Anything in the United States. We're allowed to. We're with our inspection that we're under, we're kind of limited to how far we can go and all that stuff. But yeah, but no, it's just fine, especially smoked meat. It's cured, it's smoked, it's cooked, and it's vacuum sealed. It travels great, you know. It makes a great gift for somebody. It travels fine.
And so through the years, but that just didn't happen. I mean, there's a lot in Coralita sausages, not just the meat, but there's a lot of hard work, a lot of history there. How did you become involved in the company, David?
Well, gosh, I was, when I started there, I was 15 years old. I was a sophomore in high school. And here I am today. This is my 39th year here. Boy, next year's going to be 40. Can't believe it. Anyway, time flies when you're having fun, as they say. I didn't grow up planning to be in the business that I'm in now, but it does kind of go back because my grandfather was in the meat business, my dad was in the meat business, and here I'm in the meat business. And unfortunately, though, the buck stops here because I have a son, but he's looking to go in the medical field, being a doctor. So maybe he's still in the meat business, so to speak. But
I would tell him to hang on for a little while before he goes into the medical business.
Yeah, exactly.
Well. How did you become the proprietor of this business? I mean, you started at 15.
When I started, I was just a cleanup kid, but I really got kind of fascinated, involved in it. It's kind of a neat deal. And I saw it's really gratifying to see the customers come in, and every time they say, geez, that sure was good, or geez, that's a great product. And, you know, and I don't know, I just kind of grew up feeling that way when somebody's happy, and you know, it's all about the consumer.
Come in smiling all the time, and isn't so bad after all.
It's great. As time went on, my proprietor, who I bend over, may he rest in peace. He taught me a lot, and his big motto was worry about the quality, not the quantity. And I'll tell you what, that's something that I still thrive on for this day. I can honestly say I enjoy my job.
Well, and that's part of how you've survived in the years, the Coralitas meat market. I mean, around the metropolitan marketplace, you have this, whenever anybody, hey, we've got Coralitas sausages. Oh, okay, I'm coming. So when you have that kind of reputation, you don't really have to worry about the volume. Kind of takes care of itself, right?
Well, I got this one. Whenever anybody says that, I said, boy, we sure got a lot of people fooled.
Yeah. So why aren't there more people like you, more businesses like you throughout the United States?
Well,
happened to them all?
Well, it's like I said earlier, Mike, you know, I mean, all the small mom and dad or family-owned processing places such as us are going by the wayside because, like me, I have nobody. There's been sons and family members that have taken over businesses and continued on over the years. And you know what? After this, I don't know. I have nobody that's going to take it on. I'm sure there's somebody out there would like to do it. But
business for sale.
Yep. But, we're not talking for a lot more years, that's for sure. I don't plan on going anywhere. That's for sure.
So that's part of it.
That's part of it.
Is the difficulty in translating from one generation to the next, and it makes it difficult if you don't have somebody to carry on. That would be true of the family farm. You know, you raise children on a farm, and there's no better place to raise children than on a farm because they learn how to work, they learn how to think in broad terms, they learn how to think with a number of different problems and a number of different sciences. So you raise really well-rounded children. But, well, they always want to go off and become astronauts or or doctors or what have you. And so then it becomes very difficult to maintain the family farm. And that's where we're at, right?
Well, we all want our children to better themselves, you know, that's for sure. I mean, it's nothing for me to work 9, 10 during a holiday, 12-hour days, you know, 6 days a week. I see, like, my children now, I have three, and they are all doing well and all doing real happy, and I'm very fortunate of that. But getting back to the business end of it, we really thrive on where we buy our meat products to make an excellent product. So that's kind of our goal.
Well, now we're going to take a quick break here in a little bit. When we, but when we come back, I've got a question for you that really has me puzzled. Did you, David Peterson, when you started at the age of 15, ever think that you would be selling a product that made people so happy, but that is becoming environmentally and politically incorrect? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson questions today, why did animal protein become so environmentally and politically incorrect? And what can people like David Peterson here do to survive the competition coming from the big billionaires as we go along? Food Chain Radio Show, Michael Olson, David Peterson, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, and on the Food Chain forums at metrofarm.com. Listen, folks, are you going to eat Bill Gates' replica hamburger? Ooh, right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at metrofarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high value special crops for the city at metrofarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at metrofarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at metrofarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at metrofarm.com. That's metrofarm.com.
Hey there, welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're coming to you live from the Eat Local First Festival at the Cabrillo Farmers Market, Aptos, California. One of the nation's best farmers markets. And here you can always find the Coralitas Market and Sausage Company selling their sausages and smoked meats. And there's always a line of people waiting to buy the sausages, have a big barbecue. But, you know, looking down the line, I think you guys are in for some serious competition, David Peterson. And the reason I think that is that when I was sitting down to consider what to talk about with David today, I was opened up the Wall Street Journal, and there's a story about Impossible Meat Company. A Stanford University science professor decided to make a replica meat. And he got financing from billionaire Bill Gates, and so he's got all of these Rube Goldberg test tube laboratories, and he's pouring things in, and he's making a meat-like product that looks like meat. It bleeds. They actually made a plant blood that's red, so they infused the burger with this ersatz blood, and if you squeeze it with your finger, it bleeds, you know. So it looks like hamburger. It has the texture of hamburger. It's pink and bloody like hamburger, but it doesn't quite taste like hamburger yet, but they're working on that. So my notion is that why are they doing that? I got to thinking because, I mean, I got to realizing that, oh my goodness, we're in an era now where meat is becoming politically and environmentally incorrect. So David Peterson is the proprietor of almost 40 years, Coralitas Meat and Sausage Company. How do you see this incorrectness developing for meat? I mean, you sell it every day to people who love it. People smile when they eat your meat, and you see this happening. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's kind of scary. What makes me wonder, and the thinking behind this, some of these big shot scientists and whatnot, I think it comes down to the world population. They got to start coming up with other means, other aspects of what they're doing. As far as I'm concerned, meat products will always be number one compared to what you're, you know, saying. But to me, it's scary. I would not want to eat anything like that myself. But everything's mass production, everything's fast food, Everything wants to be ready to cook, ready to eat. It's kind of scary in a way, you know. I can remember in the old days, not very many people. I can remember my mom and dad cooking a plain old roast on a Sunday night, and that roast would last, you know, for the rest of the week. You have leftovers and all that kind of stuff. But boy, we hardly sell any roasts anymore. Everything's marinated this or pre-cooked or pre-done. That's why sausages are so big. They're pre-cooked. You just heat them up, bake them, boil them, fry them, barbecue them, whatever you want, and they're done. But all this artificial stuff they're coming up with, it's scary. Now, your question to me was, am I afraid of it, or is it going to cut into us? My answer to that is absolutely 100% no. I am not afraid of that one bit. And what I like about it, and my reasoning for that is because us being a very small operation, we have control there again of the meat I buy, the meat that we process. And I sincerely believe that that's people, we have a special niche. And I'm not going to go out and worry about what the next guy does. I always worry about what we have and how we take care of it, where we get our supply, what the source is, where it's from.
Always focus on the quality and not the quantity.
Exactly.
That's what you were told when you started, and then you're still there.
Exactly.
Okay, but wait a minute. And I'm sure you remember this, too, when they introduced margarine into the world. And butter is bad. That was the first thing they did. Mm-hmm. Butter is bad for you because it makes you, I don't know what it was, cholesterol or something like that?
Correct,
So you shouldn't eat butter because butter is bad for you. What you should eat is margarine. Margarine is good for you. Even though it's filled with trans fats and partially hydrogenated vegetables, but it's good for you. Now, the way that worked is that those who were making margarine really put a lot of heat on the medical establishment, on the press. They literally hounded people out of eating butter. Now, I see some of that happening with meat now. I see I see a lot of people looking at people who enjoy meat and saying that's not the right thing to do because it's environmentally not correct and it's morally not correct. And it's all these reasons that it's not correct to eat meat. Now, if these billionaires like Bill Gates and Li Ka-shing and all of these venture capital firms are investing in companies that are manufacturing proprietary replica meats, that to me means that they're planning on a full-scale marketing campaign for the products that they're manufacturing. I mean, if you're spending $1 billion making this ersatz meat, you're going to spend $3 billion selling it to the world. So that is why I see a coming competition for people like you. Now, I don't know, it probably isn't going to come to fruition for another decade or two or three, but that's what I see coming. And I see them saying that people should not eat meat because it takes up too much space and we need to feed more people. And therefore, we can feed a lot more people with soybeans mixed with our magic elixir to make it look and taste and feel like a real meat. Mm-hmm. So someplace down the line, do you see that or am I just...
No, Mike, it's like what I said. I think these guys are thinking of this because the population's getting bigger and bigger. And I can see a lot of this happening overseas a lot, especially in a lot of our third world cultures where they're not acceptable to a lot of the things that we have here. So I can almost see them envisioning, you know, stuff in other countries where they can really use this. If it happens to us, it's like you said, it's going to be way down the line, way down the road.
You think it's way down the line?
I do. I really do. I mean, if you want to go back to what you were talking about butter compared to to margarine. Well, let's compare apples to oranges here. I mean, it seemed like when that first came out, yeah, everybody, I even switched. But you know what? I'm right back to butter. I'll tell you what.
We pretty much, anybody who's, most of us have come to our senses, okay? Okay, we've been sold a bill of goods. Mm-hmm. All right, we're back to butter. But, you know, what if they convince us that having animal agriculture is bad and that we need to get rid of animal agriculture, and then there is no animal agriculture to go back to. There's no cow to go back to for the butter.
Wow, you're digging pretty deep there, Mike. I'll tell you
all
what.
Right. But well, we just throw questions out here.
Yeah.
We have no answers, but we have questions, you know.
Yeah, oh, you bet. You know what? I mean, at this point in time, I'm not worried about it. I'll tell you. Now, maybe for the big guy, the big corporations and that stuff, meaning like you got your Costco's, the big supermarket chains and all this down the road, yeah, I can see that. It's going to come down to, Mike, the people's choice. They're going to have your foods with GMOs and all this right next to it, and then you're going to have, well, let's go back to the meat business. You're going to have your nice steak alongside it, and then you're going to have this modified meat here that they're doing. You know, people going to try it? Maybe so. You know what? I'm telling you, I still see it going back down eventually. They're going to go right back from the roots.
Okay, folks, that's where we're at today. Can we survive the competition with Bill Gates, with billionaire Bill Gates, Li Ka-shing, all those venture capital firms investing in replica meats? Meats that look, but they're not meats, right? They're something else, but they look and taste and feel and almost taste like meat. Are you going to eat them? Well, who knows? What if they succeed in convincing you that meat is bad? I know they're trying. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with David Peterson. We're going to talk about how to shop for meat when they get back. Do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here today with Dave Peterson. He's the proprietor of the Coralitas Market and Sausage Company, the world famous.
No.
No, not the world famous, just the U.S. famous. But certainly famous around our neck of the woods here in Central California. Wherever you go to a barbecue, you're more than likely to see some Coralitas sausages sizzling on the barbecue. Because they're always the first thing. I mean, it doesn't take much to throw a barbecue. Just put some good sausages on the barbie and smile, and you're there, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's happy. But we're looking deep into the future here and playing with the notion of competition for real meat. And David says, I'm not afraid of that competition. But I look down into the deep future, and I see some very serious money being invested in replica meats made with things that do not include animals, from plants, from stem cells, from all kinds of things that they put into a blender and they whip it up and it comes out looking just like meat, but it isn't meat. You know that when they put these proprietary blends of meats on the market, they're going to be investing a lot of marketing. And they're very smart with their marketing, these billionaires. They know how to shape public opinion with their money. And they know how to manage political processes with their money. And so you end up with a situation, perhaps, like we did with margarine, where people who are manufacturing margarine convinced us that we shouldn't be eating butter because it's not healthy. And so for decades we ate margarine, which was definitely not healthy, and finally coming to our senses again and eating butter. So we're back to this notion of whether we can survive it. And David, you're not afraid of competition, are you? In a sense, you've been competing all your life.
Yeah, but see, that's where I don't take it for granted, Mike, because I'm competing against myself. I'm not competing against the next guy or the guy in the next town or the next county or the next state. I just worry about ourselves, our business, and what we do and how we do it.
How do you keep up competing with yourself? You know, I think of I've heard about 3 million stories of well-meaning people who go into public service, and they become bureaucrats,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And after a couple of months of being a bureaucrat, well, they're just a bureaucrat, and so much for the good intentions, because you're a bureaucrat. Now, when you're in business for yourself, you can't do that. You have to be always competing. How do you always compete with yourself?
Well, you know what? I like that question. But you know what? It's really not that difficult, because, you know, one thing that's really helped me, or us, I should say, for the years was, you know, we belong to an organization. It's called AMP, American Association of Meat Processors. And we get literature every month, magazines, stuff. They have a convention once a year. Then I also belong to a state group where we have, again, seminars. We go to trade shows. We also have meetings with our state and local authorities and stuff about different inspection plans and so on and so forth. And it keeps us on top in the food business as to what's going on. And you know what? You only know, say you're never too old to learn.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what, because if you think you got to figure it out, well, you better call it quits. you got to stay with it. You always got to learn. You just always have an open mind.
Okay, speaking of open minds, I have a question for you. Which is safer, meat that comes from a giant industrial packing plant, or meat that comes from a small family-owned packing plant?
Well, okay, I like that one. I got an answer for you. All right. Well, and I always like the idea, because we're small. I definitely like to help the small grower, you know, producer, whatever. But sometimes we are so busy that I can't do that, because we are selling so much product they can't supply me because they're so small. So I have to look for other means. But now that's where it gets kind of tricky, because then, like I've told you starting off this program, I got to look for the quality. I got to head around there. Sure, it costs more, but that's what it takes to make a good product. Yes, I have to sell it for more, but never have complaints. Nobody comes back. It's quality, and that's all I care about. So the local guy is always great, 100%. I do what I can do, and so on and so forth. But sometimes I have to find other means.
Well, I'm thinking in terms from the consumer. You know, you see periodically this giant processor who sells meat throughout the Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
The meat's contaminated, and 17,853 people got sick, and so.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, who's responsible in that whole scheme of things? So there's nobody there to look. When I go to, like, Coralitas Meat Market or my neighborhood meat market and look across the counter and see David Peterson standing there, and I look into his eyes and they say, David, what's in the meat? What's in the sausage? And you're responsible. I mean, you're the man. But there's nobody. There's no man there when there's a, I mean, there's a government that's going to take care of you. But, you know, those nice people in the government, you know, they're busy doing this. I mean, one little thing can spoil, you know, meat for thousands and thousands of people. And mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, I feel safe when I can look in your mm-hmm. eyes.
You know how I feel about that. Excuse me. That's why I stress on trying to buy from the smaller facilities and so on and so forth. You know, it kind of gets me, because we're under inspection at the store, right? And they have us doing. Well, I have a smokehouse chart. I got a temperature, the weight it goes in, the weight it comes out, the temperature reading when it comes out, so I know it was fully cooked. There's a sanitation report. Chart I've got to keep the other day. We have an SSOP we have to do. All the paperwork that's involved in all this, and yet, in some of the big plants, all that stuff that's under federal inspection, was supposed to be safe. This is where they're having the problems.
That's what I'm saying.
And it's really frustrating, because what happens in
everybody
the...
Everybody fills out paperwork, David.
Oh, paperwork. I swear I had
okay, you fill out paperwork. They fill out paperwork. Yeah. Everybody fills out paperwork.
It's ridiculous.
But that's not the issue. I don't feel safe by paperwork. Paperwork doesn't make me feel safe at all.
Well, what I'm getting at, Mike, is these inspections in the big plants and stuff that have this go back to the federal inspection. You know, when something happens, you know, it affects the whole meat business. Even us little guys, it gives us a black eye. Even though we didn't do anything, you know,
it
affects all of us. So whenever I hear of something wrong or recall, I go, here we go. But anyway, so now to get back to your other question is, so the place that
I have to hold that because we have to take a quick break.
Okay, you got it.
Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, hey, today we're broadcasting live from the Eat Local First Food Festival, put on by Think Local First County of Santa Cruz, California. Here on California's Central Coast, a lot of people walking around eating local food. And when we get back, we're going to talk about shopping for meat with Dave Peterson. We're going to figure out how to get the best buys on the best meat. Do stay tuned.
Yeah, Kenny should be sitting right here.
Well, we're back. Hey, folks, Michael Olson. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. David Peterson, Coralitas Market and Sausage Company. We're talking about meat. We're talking about meat that isn't meat. And we're looking deep into the future and wondering if in another few years we won't be able to eat the Coralitas, wonderful Coralitas Market sausages because it will be politically incorrect to eat real food when the big boys have other things for us to eat. I don't even like the thought of that. I just don't
you and me
even
both.
Like them. So the reason we're talking about this, of course, is that there's a big article in the Wall Street Journal about Bill Gates and Li Ka-shing and other billionaires and venture capital firms investing big money in biotech firms to develop foods that are environmentally and politically correct, which is to say they're not meat. And we're kind of looking at that situation and wondering, you know, given how much impact those billions of dollars can have in shaping public opinion and shaping political processes, whether, you know, we will be talked out of eating meat as we were once talked out of eating butter. And we're looking at that and scratching our head and going, is this really something that we can look forward to? If so, how can consumers shape that competition? How can we use our dollars to overcome those billionaire dollars, David?
Hey, Michael, I have a very nice lady, a Patty in Watsonville, on hold. Shall we take her?
Yeah, we have a phone call. Okay, let's take the question and I'll relay it to David. Go ahead. Patty, welcome. That's okay. Let's just run with this show here, David. Okay, Aaron?
Yes.
We're just going to run with the show here.
Okay.
All right. Tell Patty to call back in the next hour, okay?
Will do.
All right, good. Go ahead. Do you remember the question I asked?
Well, okay. Yeah, you know, one thing I'll jump back on track what you said, but you mean to tell me if there was a world famous chef sitting right here in this seat, right alongside you right now, you think he's going to go to some of this modified beef and pork and chicken? Is he going to use margarine instead of butter? Is he going to use a fake wine in his cooking?
Well, wait a minute. What if his company is being supported by billions of dollars? What if he is being paid to say those things? I mean, how did they convince us to eat margarine instead of butter? How on earth did they do that?
You know, I guess the almighty buck always rules, but I just don't see it, Mike. I'm telling you.
Well, okay, but wait a minute. Look at the impact they're having with the political incorrectness of meat now, and the ethical incorrectness, and how if you eat your meat, you're bad. There's a lot of that going on right now out there in the world. And people looking down at people who eat meat because they're being environmentally insensitive and so on and so on and so on. They did the same thing with margarine. Did they not?
Yes, they did. As far as I'm concerned, this might be something new in the meat business. But meat business actually, for years and years and years, have actually been people talking bad about meat and so on and so forth. But you know what? It's still a thriving industry to this day.
People still
I'm
eat
telling
meat,
you, if
yeah.
it's good, if it's good, they're going to eat it. And it's like anything else, Mike. It's moderation. Yeah. I don't eat a steak every night of the week. Yeah, right. You know, I work with it. It's like we're in a donut shop. You can only eat so many donuts.
Right.
You know, I work in a meat shop. I can only eat so much meat. I love for dinner having a plain old salad.
Amen.
You know?
Well, of course. But then I'm going to the barbecue this afternoon, and I know there's going to be some sausages there, and I know I'm going to eat them. But at any rate, you know, we're talking about how consumers can shape this coming competition,
mm-hmm.
how consumers can shape the kinds of meat that they get, you know, how consumers can shape the marketplace with their dollars. That's what I'm thinking. You know, I spoke earlier of having a fear of these large industrial meat packs. You know, they're shipping chickens to China to process them now.
Oh, yes, they are.
Shipping them back. I don't want to eat that chicken. I just don't want to eat it. I'm sorry, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Not me. How do I find the chicken that I want to eat?
Well, that goes back to buying more local. You have, especially out here at farmers markets. You have the organic, naturally, you know, no hormones, antibiotics, all... It's quality product, you know. And I went back to say earlier, everything is fast change. Taco Bell's, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Maybe I shouldn't be saying names. They're going to come back to haunt me now. But
those folks are having in China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they took their show to China, and now they're in deep doo doo over there. McDonald's mm-hmm. and Kentucky Fried Chicken. Mm-hmm. Because they just don't have that figured out in China. But what we're doing now is we're shipping our meat to China to have it processed and then shipping it back to the United States to eat it.
Yeah.
And that.
Okay, and Mike, excuse me for interrupting you, but there again, the almighty buck. It's political that you were talking about. Thing here in the States, too expensive with the labor and all is all it is. It's cheaper to have it sent over there. They mass produce it, whatever they do, send it back here for a cheaper amount. It's just almost the same thing in Hawaii. A big percentage of the sugar canes are going over in Hawaii. All right, what do? You would think it'd be cheaper for them to make it here and send it right over to the States. Said they send it over to us, as an example. They make it, send it back to Hawaii, and it costs them more than what we suffer here, and yet it's raised right there in Hawaii.
Wow.
You know, it's crazy.
Well, yeah, I guess that's what it is. It's a crazy world.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want it crazy. I want it smart, and I want it simple.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I make it smart, and how do I make it simple?
Well, that's why I'm not worried about this. I know you and I are going to go round and round on this politically. Bill Gates shaping
Bill Gates.
The people's opinions on about what they eat and stuff. But I know the consumer's a consumer, and I think they really know. They're going to know the difference. You can bring it out. You can put it out there. I think it's always going to come back to local quality and the real deal, Mike.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to finish up with the real deal in food. It will be not the billionaire meat, replica meat that they're manufacturing. Sorry, just don't even want to go there, folks. I want it real, I want it simple, and I want it full of life. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson and David Peterson. We will be right back. Do stay tuned. Hey, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Couple minutes left, but with David Peterson, the proprietor of the Coralitas Market and Sausage Company. And we're talking about meat, and you know, we're talking a little bit about how they're taking our meat now from the United States. It's the meats that are raised in these giant factories, and shipping that meat to China and processing it and then shipping the meat back here. And I guess they do that because it's cheap, right? Maybe. But let me ask you to comment on Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't.
Okay, cheap food. That's an interesting subject, the way you quote that, Michael. I'll tell you what. Cheap food, there again, how I started, you know, you get what you pay for, as the old saying goes. But, I mean, hey, I'm not saying all cheap food's bad by any means. It's just in our particular field, we have a competition out there and our competition ourselves in keeping up with our quality. And that's just what it comes down to. Cheap food, as far as food institutions go and all that, they've got to stretch it out. Like I said, other countries, that's what they have to do too. You know, not everybody can afford a filet mignon steak at $25 a pound, you know.
Well, and there's the rub. You know, if Bill Gates and Li Ka-shing and other venture capital firms in their biotech industry can make, you know, hamburgers that look and kind of feel and almost taste like real hamburgers, okay, for a dollar or less a, okay, pound.
Okay, well, you know what I'd like to answer that is because I mean, long before meat, we're talking thousands of years now, you know. Let's talk some about vegan. You know, now that you've got hammers made out of soybean. And you know, and actually, I don't know if you ever had that. I and it's really quite good. You know, it's a change. It's delicious. It's good. So what I want to know is how far are they going to take this to the extreme? That's what I want to know. You know, sometimes just by modifying foods, they're taking shortcuts. And what procedure, what ingredients are they going to use to do that?
And I think that's what are they going to put in the food? Oh, hey, we're out of time, but my goodness sakes, what fun it was. David Peterson, proprietor of the world-famous Coralitas Market and Sausage Company. And I look forward to eating some of your sausages at the barbecue this afternoon. David, thank you all for... thank you all for tuning in out there. And remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain. Cheap food isn't, so say no to Bill Gates' replica burgers. To heck with it. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.